Oh, okay. Stretch that. Come on out.
So cozy.
Thank
with
you.
Glory.
Yeah. All right. Welcome, everyone, to this November 3rd, 2015 meeting of the Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. Looking around the dais here, we have a quorum, all members present except for Ginny Gerlick. So we will call this meeting to order, and please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you, and let's rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You know what? I'm going to move so I can get more of that. Get you in the center.
All right. Okay, thank you. Do we have any announcements or presentations at this time? Did we switch our name tags? We will. But are there any announcements or presentations? Taking that as a no, we will move on to public comment. This is an opportunity for members of the public to speak on anything that is not on today's agenda item. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak? Okay, moving through pretty quickly. On to the consent calendar, and this is approval of the minutes from our October 20th meeting is the first item. So let's have a little discussion here. Do we have any comments on the minutes, or can I get a motion and a second for approval?
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the minutes as stated.
Second.
Okay. Before we do that, I'm going to ask for any public comment.
Oh, I'm
that's a procedure. Seeing none. Okay. Then we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. That passes unanimously. And facility program update. The recommendation to receive the update. This is item A2, so I'll turn it over to staff.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Good afternoon. We have a staff report for agenda item A2, and I'll walk through some of the highlights from that. So we've attached a summary of the existing contracts. You're used to seeing this. Kind of gives the status of each one of the ongoing contracts we have right now for this phase of the project, and also some of the past contracts for some of the site options work. And I'm open if you've got any questions for those, of course. The major accomplishments and milestones that we've had just in the last month since the October 6th update at your last meeting, or at last program update that we had, we of course had the meeting on the 20th to talk facility master plan. We've completed negotiation of the scope and budget for program management software. And Barbara was very helpful. She gave us some ideas on the negotiation from her background. It was very helpful. So we've selected a software for program management, and that's a software tool that will let us communicate easily with all the team members, track all the correspondence, and then during construction phase, it'll also let us track all the different communication going back and forth among us and the contractors. Really important tool to have for a program of this size. So the city signed an agreement yesterday for the purchase of that software. So we've got that done. We've continued preparation of the application process for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Planning Loan. So the first council meeting in December will be coming back with request council approve a resolution authorizing Rob Livick to be able to sign that application, and that's for a planning loan from the state revolving fund. The outreach team conducted stakeholder interviews on the 14th and 15th. The Program management team hosted a technical workshop presenting project delivery options on October the 17th. We did that at two times. There was a 10 o'clock and a 2:30. And that was to discuss project delivery options such as design build and design build operate finance and construction management at risk. So we had pretty good attendance at those. I think we had about 30 folks total between the two, between the morning and afternoon sessions. Various conference calls and meetings with Facility Master Plan. You're seeing the results of some of that work in the tech memos you reviewed from the last meeting and some of the additional information you'll get today. We're nearly complete with the base mapping and survey work along the Highway 41 corridor from the existing plant site up to Highway 41, or up to the Rancho Colina site and including the Rancho Colina site. So we have a draft survey, we field checked it, and it's gone back to the surveyor for completion. Completed a draft technical memorandum that's identified some sources of salinity in the city's wastewater collection system. So we're working through that draft with staff. You'll see an update from us in one of the future WRFCAC meetings on salinity. And as you all know, the total dissolved solids is one of the parameters that we use to measure salinity in a water supply or in a recycled water supply in our case. Becomes really important when we're looking at different uses for that water, such as groundwater recharge or direct reuse of that water for agriculture. So the more that we can control the input of salinity into the water system, into the sewer system, the more that we save on the capital cost and operation and maintenance costs at the new water reclamation facility.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
What is the TDS in our drinking water from the state right now that we have?
Well, right now we're operating our desal plant water, so so it's a bit lower than state water. So state water is pretty high these days. It's up around 400 to 600.
So you may bust. You're going to have to somehow treat TDS as part of this treatment plant to get it to the 500 that I'm reading.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And the reason that
that's where I'm trying, because that's a different treatment altogether than I've heard so.
Typically, state water is much lower. But because of the drought, I think they're getting a little breakthrough in the delta. So typically TDS is made up of calcium, magnesium compounds. We're getting more sodium chlorides in state water these days than we have in past years. So
I was just trying to put together in my mind, you're going to have to treat for TDS based on the potable water that's going to be coming out to the treatment plant. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So basically, since you got some background salt in the water supply that's already putting you at a level that could limit your use of that, even if you just went direct, that you're going to have to pull some salt out even with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank
yeah,
you.
That's accurate. So we've continued.
I do have a follow-up on that. Are you ready to tell us, even though that is still in a draft status, that where the sources of salinity are coming from in our city?
So I can tell you part of what we need to do with the draft is we need to vet that draft before we say what percentages or quantities. But your typical, in every community, your sources of salt are folks using the water. So sanitary use of the water adds some salt. When you take water, you drink it, and then it goes back in your wastewater collection system, that increases your salt. The other source is if there is water softeners. So the use of water softeners increases salt content in the collection system. And then the use of on-site regenerating water softeners will also increase the pounds of loading of salt into the collection system. And then there can be industrial uses that can increase the salt input too. So there's a number of different places that comes from. And then, of course, there's the source water itself, as Steve stated. Yeah, that can take up a big percentage of that salt in a lot of water system or a lot of sewer systems. We've continued property negotiation with the owner of the top-ranked site from the options report, so that work is ongoing. And then we conducted community workshop number one on October 29th, and we saw several of you there for that. And John, if you want to maybe give a quick update on that.
Sure. On the 29th, we had a workshop, really the first broad workshop about the facility master plan. The idea was to provide, part of it was to tell the community at large where we're at, but the main focus was to get input to help us guide what should go into the facility master plan, both in terms of programming, but also a real focus on the visual aspects of it. So we did, generally speaking, present imagery that showed other treatment plants or other facilities that aren't treatment plants to get a feel for architecture that could be used, but also things like landscape treatments and such, and then had interactive exercises to get input from the public about preferences, visual preferences, one way or another. All of that to say that what shouldn't be considered the final word on what's going to happen, but did provide us some fairly interesting feedback relative to things that people tend to like and not like. As you might imagine, a lot of the key input related to a desire to keep things looking rural in terms of architecture, desire to screen things to the extent possible with appropriate landscaping and berming to keep the facility as low profile as possible, and how that relates to the final design. I think we'll try to reflect all that in the facility master plan, leaving enough flexibility in the design to account for on-site conditions. But very important feedback right now. The idea then being we'll have a workshop closer to the time that the facility master plan is ready to be released to present that and to say, here's how we used feedback from you through the process to get to where we are.
And we'll walk through the near-term schedule that we had at the end of the program update. And there are some changes we wanted to talk to you all about. So first, technical workshop number two, liquid treatment technologies. That's the joint WRFCAC and council study session scheduled for the 17th. So there's been a scheduling conflict with council for that date. They have a conflict. So we want to look at keeping that as a special WRFCAC meeting. So we would come, the facility master plan team would still come and present the technical memorandum 7 on liquid treatment technologies, so WRFCAC could get a chance to review and respond to that. And
can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
I'll be at the city council that day for the interview process.
Okay.
To be back on here. Are you looking at the 3 to 5 time frame for the WRFCAC committee on that day?
That's what we were looking at, but
okay.
It depends on who's available.
It may be a conflict for me, so
okay.
To make you aware. I thought they were going to dovetail into each other where City Council and WRFCAC met when later in the day, so to speak.
Okay.
That's why we're looking at changing that meeting to December 1st.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we're – we can't have both those meetings overlapping each other, and we need to get the advisory body interviews completed by that meeting. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the thing that I would add there too is are there what we were originally thinking was we could have a regular WRF or a special WRFCAC meeting at that meeting. I just say it's a special WRFCAC meeting because we normally meet, the first Tuesday of the month. But if you're not, are there others from this advisory committee also who wouldn't be available at that time, that day?
I think I'm up because of the PWAB committee. I don't think it has to do with the WRFCAC.
That's for the 17th, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I
When
I'm
we not. Change it to the 1st,
oh,
that
I
doesn't
got you.
Conflict with the interviews. So I guess I wasn't that clear. So
We're looking at changing it to December 1st for the joint meeting, right, so it doesn't conflict with the interviews.
Right. Yeah. But we would still have a regular WRFCAC meeting on the 17th, just WRFCAC.
Just WRFCAC on the 17th.
A joint on the December 1st. And then, in lieu of that December 9th meeting, we would have that December 1st joint meeting instead. So we had a December 9th community workshop. So that would go away. And actually, so one thing that we wanted to alert the council, the advisory committee to, is there will be some impact to the facility master plan schedule as a result of some of the property negotiation and some of the property discussion. The positive is we've built some float into all these schedules. We'll have a better update for you at the next meeting on what the schedule impact that will be, because we're needing to just have some additional time for some negotiation.
There's not anything locked down yet as far as the property?
No, sir. But we'll have a better schedule update for you in the future. Okay. So at this point, open for any questions.
Okay, any questions up here on the budget or the schedule or status to date? No? Okay. This is, I believe, just a receive and file on consent, so no action necessary.
Yeah.
This is A2, yes, sir.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. It seems like we walk our way through this update every time, so it may not be appropriate that we keep it on the consent agenda, so I think we'll probably just move this item to old business so that we don't have to pull it from consent every time, and we'll keep the minutes on consent and maybe a little bit more routine items, on if there is such a thing with this project, routine items on the consent, but the update will pull to old business so that we plan on having that time to discuss it. If that
makes sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then just I pulled up our consumer confidence report, and TDS on state water ranges from 340 to 572.
Okay. Any public comment on A2? Seeing none, we'll move from consent and move to old business. Item B1 is subcommittee updates. Take them in order here. Any update from the finance subcommittee?
I got one comment. I did some research on Prop 1, and it appears that we are, especially downtown, in the Prop 1 funding, a severe disadvantaged community, and then there's areas of disadvantaged being a disadvantaged community. So I think that this needs to be looked at a little bit more closely. But if you look at the Prop 1 funding that the OPC had just, Ocean Protection Council had just released for letters of intent, Morro Bay appears to have a opportunity there for disadvantaged community.
Okay, thank you. Maybe that's something Kestrel can look into, because I think disadvantaged community definitions do range widely. Environmental subcommittee, I don't think we have anything to update from this last meeting. And engineering, nothing on your end. Okay. This is also receive and consider updates, so I'll ask if there's any public comment. Seeing none, we will move on to C1, new business, the facility master plan update, and receive update and provide comments. So turn it back over to staff.
Okay. Thank you. We have with us today Matt Thomas with Black & Veatch, who's a senior project engineer that's been working on the master plan. And we'd like to cover a couple of items today. We're really asking for the advisory committee to give us feedback on technical memoranda 2 and 3 that were provided at the last meeting. And then we'd also like to give, Black and Beach would also like to give a brief overview of technical memorandum 6 that you received today. And we talked last time about how we're going to have an approximate 2-week cycle where we'll be providing technical memoranda as they're developed to WRFCAC, some of the more critical ones, getting input from you then at the following WRFCAC meeting, and kind of continuing that rotation until we ultimately have the draft facility master plan that you will also see with all the analysis presented in complete. So at this point, I will turn it over to Matt Thomas with Black and Veatch.
Thanks, Matt.
So just to clarify, we're going to hear about TM number 6 right now, briefly discuss it.
2 and 3.
We're going to revisit 2 and 3 again right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right, that's correct.
Yep.
So what we wanted...
Okay, that's fine.
Make sure if I'm doing this right. This wasn't on. Am I not standing close enough?
Yeah, I need to write.
Okay. Okay, so as Mike indicated, we want to basically review with you your comments on TMs 2 and 3, and then we've handed you copies of TM 6. TM 2 is speaking to the projected flows and constituent loadings that will come to the water reclamation facility. TM3 is a memo on decommissioning of the existing plant, and TM6 talks about biosolids treatment. Since we're doing this in a public forum, we thought we'd take a minute and just walk through an overview of the two TMs you've already read, just for sake of people that might not have been familiar with these.
And so, Matt, do you mind, we're not a shy bunch up here, interrupting you on each TM, or would you like us to wait?
That would be fine.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. So, as I said, that's the summary of what we're doing today. And these, you've seen this before last time when our project manager, Steve Felmy, was here. These are three among 9 technical memos that you will see as we build up to the FMP. So we'll talk about first about TM2. So this is flows and loads. That's what we are shorthand for it. And basically the premise of this TM was to look at population projection, understand what the flows are going to be and the loads are going to be based on that future population. We've also summarized effluent quality requirements. So what is the water quality requirements that are going to be required for the various reuse options that we're considering in the FMP? And then we were asked to provide recommendations on a sampling program, which Bruce Keough and his staff are now starting to enact. So they're doing additional sampling of your incoming wastewater to further define the constituents. One of the key things, again, was population. We worked closely with the city and with John Rickenbach to predict, come up with a prediction of population for the city in the future. As you can see up there, your city hasn't grown very much in population over the last few years. And more importantly, you currently have a general plan update going on, and you have Measure F in place. So all of these point to, along with the growth patterns that you've seen, a population projection of about 12,000 people in the future. So that is being used as the basis for sizing of the future water reclamation facility.
Can I interrupt you right here?
Yeah, sure.
Back in 2006, okay, you know, this analysis was, a similar analysis was done, by Corollo, okay? And one of the things that they came up with, this was the report that came out. One of the things that they came out with was that the original plant was designed for 2.36 MGD, and then they stated that based on the history that that the plant with Cayucas was 1.45 MGD. And I noticed you talk about population and all that. This seems like, to me, like just kind of a repeat of that. I don't think our effluents changed that much in these years. The problem that I hear from a lot of people is that we're doing reports, same reports, over and over and over again. And I've said this since the very beginning. It's not just population. We have a deplorable collection system that's leaching sewage all over the city, okay? Especially down the trunk line, the Main Street trunk line. There's other areas, okay? Now, when you start fixing those things, that's going to affect not only your flow, your solids, but also your flows. And the one of the things that was done in the Corollo that I had took issue with was it makes reference to a study, and I kind of want to know where you're getting your information from, but this study here that was done by the Wallace Group, and it's the Sewer System Master Plan, it was referenced in this Corollo. Now, this is I'll go to court on this. This is a flawed study because they used some of my data from Cayucas on it, and it was manipulated, okay? And one of the main thing on this is that they downsized the plant, okay? That's a problem. When we start fixing if the collection system gets fixed, you're going to have more flow. If the there's a huge, huge issue with vacation rentals, okay? Vacation rentals in Cayucas are huge, you know, per percentage. And here, I'm getting numbers of 1 in 6, okay? It's changing the whole dynamics of the city. Mm-hmm. So when we need to start taking that into account, okay? When we start looking at our flows and our solids and all that stuff, now, because if we don't, we're not going to have the option of having a 301H waiver and dump it in the ocean like we do now. So I just want to make sure that, you know, that's on the table always.
Yeah, I can't speak to the issue of the condition of the sewer system, but we have been thinking about it because we've heard your remarks. And what we are considering on the treatment process side, one of the factors that's been used for evaluating the various treatment processes is the ability for them to be modular or expandable. So we consider that as one of the criteria for evaluating the various alternatives, and when our treatment process experts come in to speak with you at the next meeting, they'll be able to speak to that in more detail. But the notion there is to develop the plant in such a way that if flows were to change in the future and become higher, that there would be opportunity to expand the plant. The second is likewise, you'll see at the next meeting, discussion about the types of treatment processes that would be selected and the necessity for those treatment processes to have the flow go through them at a pretty steady pace. So the technique is called flow equalization, and it requires storage within the treatment system to balance the flows going through the plant. So that's another opportunity to provide space so that if flows were to change in the future, the opportunity to add more flow equalization to help manage those changes.
From a cost perspective, though, okay, and I have experience in this, you need to have the right number to start off with. Otherwise, it's like the change orders are going to end up costing more than the original project. So I think that it really should be on the forefront that our flows are going to change, and our flows need to be estimated correctly. And I don't think they are right now.
And I thought we had this discussion last meeting where peak flows are pretty well known and plants being spec'd for peak flows.
Well, and the thing that I would chime in is, you know, and mm-hmm. and I don't disagree. Your flow data is only good as what you can measure out there. But the thing I'll say that the Black and Veatch team has done that we also looked at is you always look at similar communities and how much flow that population generates and how many loads that population generates. And that can give you a pretty good idea if you're in question on whether you've got a big exfiltration issue or not. Now, I can't say, what I can say is the flows and loads that we see from Mora Bay are what we would expect for a community of its size. And so when treatment plants are designed, engineers do things very conservatively, and I'll say there's always a little bit of conservatism built into those designs. And a lot of what Matt's saying makes a lot of sense. Let's say if you went through a big exercise over the next, say, 10 years, and you went through and you replaced every collection line in town, let's say, most extreme case, and you saw that your flows jumped up 10-20%. You can accommodate that with the technologies that we're looking at that the team settled on. They're looking at its sequencing batch reactor ranked very high, and also membrane bioreactor ranked very high. Those, unlike oxidation ditches or something, are real easy to scale. So you can add another cell onto a sequencing batch reactor in 10 years if you saw you needed to. You can add another bank of membranes onto a membrane bioreactor system. And so let's say if we saw a huge increase as a result of collection system repairs or any other reason, let's say there was some opportunity came up in the future and the city needed to respond to it, then these processes take that into account.
I got a quick question, though, because of what Richard brought up. If you actually repair the collection system so there's no exfiltration during the dry weather, the wet weather flows would go down because there's no infiltration at that point in time. And usually you're designing these things on a wet weather condition. So I'm not sure. I understand what Richard's saying, but I'm not quite sure that's the driving characteristic. And go ahead, you can answer.
Yeah, that's a bit of a false analogy there, because what happens is not only when you have infiltration, you have your wet weather. They're not designed for wet weather. They're designed for a certain average, and they're designed for solids, and they're designed for, and then they're designed for like average flows. The INI, yeah, would go down, but the continual, the exfiltration that is occurring right now, is I would say like the significant factor here. Because when you have INI, you have a lot of this gets washed through, and then we have also, you got to remember, we have a waiver here. We have a 301H waiver that allows us to blend it and dump it in the ocean. Those kind of options are going to be limited later on.
Yeah, and the thing I'll say to that is your points right on the high flows during wet weather. If you repair the collection system, those flows come down. And I think what Richard's saying is if you had exfiltration, you might have some dissolved BOD or some dissolved organics going out of the collection system. That could be if that were to occur. The thing I'll say is the loads that we see coming to that plant, pounds per BOD per capita, however you want to look at it, look to be what we would expect for a community of this size. So we wouldn't expect it to be significant. It looks like other communities of this size. And that's where these treatment technologies work well for the wet weather issues that you're kind of citing, because the equalization accounts for that. And then they work well with if loads increased in the future for any reason, as Richard's stating, you've got the footprint and you've got the layout, so you can add a bank to it if you had to.
Well, since Since it kind of opened this can of worms, so to speak, I had a question on another matter regarding the flows, and that's the peak hourly flow you're using, and it's up around 7.5 or something like that. That seems huge to me, and as I read the document, it sounded as though some of the numbers came from fuzzy math, so to speak. You didn't have good enough readings of certain things. This is a very critical cost because that's going to do the lift station. That's going to do the pressure main up to the plant. I'd like to see a little bit of extra money get spent to know truly what we have, because correct me if I'm wrong, 7.5 seems high for a town this size for a peaking factor. And I don't do this all for a living, but I do work with sewer treatment plants on, and it just seems very high to me.
Yeah, we agree. In subsequent to finishing this TM, we've been having discussions with the city staff, and we've adopted a lower peak factor just for planning purposes. So you're exactly right. There continues to be some difficulty in screening out some spurious data from the city's measurements. Mm. So and we're doing some more of that currently with the city staff.
Because it looked like it was almost going to be 6,000 gallons per minute coming out of that lift station based on that peaking. Raised my hackles, so to speak.
Yes.
Or at least wish to look at it further to make sure, because those are very important construction costs of this whole plant. So
just to provide an update, too, we, as a result of the working together on these peaking factors and flow estimates, the city has placed flow meters at 3 points in the collection system, and the goal is to try to get away from any inaccuracies you might have right at the plant. The plant's kind of an old plant, wasn't ideally laid out for flow meter,
right,
as you can imagine, and so we have a collection, and Bruce, I think those are already out, right, or we're close to putting them out in the collection system at 3 or 4 locations, so we can try to catch some of this wet weather.
Yeah.
And we're hoping with the weather that's anticipated, the El Nino anticipated this year, we should catch some pretty good peaks. And so that'll help inform what we're doing too on master plan. So the goal is, when we identify, and this happens on every master plan, you always have flow issues that you can't quite resolve, your picking factors are conservative, and you're also keeping in mind it's just a plan. And when we get a year from now, we'll have really good data on the water quality and also really good data on flows that we'll be able to hand over to that design team to help them refine some of these numbers.
Oh, okay. And as far as the BOD levels, those do look what I'm accustomed to. Thank you.
Oh, well, I was just going to ask whether the city was implementing some kind of a measuring system for quantity and quality of effluent, and it sounds like you are, and that is the basis of TM2, as far as I'm concerned, is recommending to the city to get better data for design purposes, and it looks like you're on the stick to be able to do that. And this is a perfect year with El Nino and all the other things going on, so I hope the city does endeavor and invest into maybe bigger weirs, so as it doesn't overflow, so that you can get the peak data that will be helpful to the ultimate design team. So I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, sir.
And I just have one question, I suppose, on this topic. Is it anticipated at some point there'll be some sort of value engineering analysis where the cost of addressing the peak is X and fixing the INI is Y, and it financially makes more sense to address one over the other? Or are you still just sort of looking at the plant at this point?
At this point, we're looking at the plant. And Rob, I don't know, you might want to speak to other plant evidence.
So under our sanitary sewer master plan, we don't have an option not to investigate and repair INI issues. So we have the city broken down into sections, and we do videoing of those sections, and then have a repair program that looks into that for INI reduction.
that is not an option. So we will continue to do that. We'll probably never fix 100% of our INI problems because we will just start over again with the rest of the city, because we're not going to dig up the entire city, put all new pipe in starting next year, and then go from there.
No, and I understand that. I'm just thinking, for example, if you have a known problem and it's $5 million to fix the INI, and the INI is causing a peaking that is resulting in a $7 million cost to the wastewater treatment mm-hmm. plant, it would make sense to address the INI
right.
versus the
house. We do have a large okay. capital project identified on the Main Street line that will continue to move forward in a parallel process with the water reclamation facility.
Okay, thank you.
I have a quickie, and it's for Black & Veatch.
Yes, sir.
I have TM2 here. I've read it 2-3 times. I have your handout today, of which is supposed to represent what you're throwing on the screen for us to review. And the first thing is I see no correlation between this document and what you throw up there on the board. And then I see no correlation between what you're throwing up on the board versus what is handed out here for us to go along with you. I'm just wondering if there's some way for you to correlate all of these different documents that you're pouring at us so that we can keep track of where you are and be able to comment in a timely manner anyway, to you on what you're presenting.
Sure, I would have to look at what you have in front of you right now.
I have what you gave me.
Okay, so we're on slide 10, and does slide 10 not?
What exactly are you?
I think what he's asking for is specific references, if I can speak for you, from this document. In other words, section 3.1.2-4 correlates to this. I viewed this as a high-level summary, but if somebody thought, that's not what I read last week, what sections are the backup documentation?
Right. You're exactly right. This is a high-level summary, so it doesn't perfectly correlate to the TM.
Let me remind you that you handed this stuff out to us at the last meeting and asked us to review it, and now you came back, and now we are supposed to review it. And we aren't reviewing it. What we're doing is we're going to a different level of presentation, of which gets you out of here without reviewing these documents, which are very important to the city of Morro Bay.
Oh yeah, I'll jump in to help. So, what we'd envision we do today is Matt just wanted we wanted Black & Veatch just to give a high level review of major points from Tech Memo 2. And then we're asking you all to provide comments as you go based on your detailed review. And so I'm sorry that wasn't clear. But we want you all to jump in at any point in here and ask questions based on your review of that Tech Memo 2. Because all Matt's trying to do is, this is kind of for the folks watching on television, so they can see what's in Tech Memo 2 and kind of follow along with what you all reviewed at a high level. But we want you all to make comments on what you reviewed, if that makes sense.
Right. Our intent was to just give a quick overview and then go through your comments in detail.
I'll shut up, but you're glossing over the meat. What you're doing is making a public presentation to Joe Sixpack on issues which are very germane as to what's going to happen here, and I see this as a tap dance to get to the city council, and you're not going to be able to discuss meaningful issues that Richard brought up and Steve brought up and Barbara brought up and maybe I did on issues that you need to address in your TM2, of which you haven't had any discussion of on the words and proposals and discussion of of where Morro Bay is on all of these population and flows and peak flows and recommendations. I see in TM2 that Black and Beach, bless their hearts, and I know they're from KC and KC won the World Series and all that, but in your documents of your technical TMs are making already requirements of the city that I hope it appears that they're listening, you know, like they're metering quantity and quality of flows through this winter for design purposes. And I hope that's true, but we don't, from my perspective, from this side of the podium, it appears that they're listening to you closer than I realized, and I'm glad to hear that.
Can I make one suggestion? The idea being, Matt is making a brief overview of the entire TM. Haven't finished that. I know you've all read the whole document in great detail. It would be impossible for him to go page by page as a presentation, but you all have questions, I'm sure, and to maybe march through systematically on the key points that he can address, such as those, as we get through the whole process.
Yeah, I'd like to see now. I take back what I said earlier about jumping in. Let's let you get through TM2, and then we can dive in, as staff said, and you want to do, we can dive into the more technical questions, because we still have another TM, two more TMs really to discuss, and not that much time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so high-level overview. As I was saying, we have we looked at population. We looked at the prior studies to make comparisons. We've developed peaking factors, all the various peaking factors that are used in a typical wastewater treatment plant design or water reclamation facility design. Max day and peak hour flows were difficult to ascertain because of the flow metering, which we just discussed. We'll skip that one. We've also developed load factors. So the load factors are based on the testing that the city does on an ongoing basis to establish BOD, which is biological oxygen demand, TSS, total suspended solids, and TKN, which is a measure of nitrogen. And then we developed effluent water quality requirements based on the different end-use options, looking at groundwater recharge, agricultural reuse, and Title 22 for recycled water. We'll skip over those. And then we recommended a sampling program coming out of that to provide additional measurements. The city currently typically measures BOD and TSS, so we've come up with a robust sampling program that, as I said earlier, Bruce Keough and his staff are currently enacting. So that's the summary of TM2, very high level, and we've heard a lot of your comments already, but I think we're ready to jump in.
Now I can unleash the dogs. Okay. Would you like to go, Dale? The first dog up here.
Are with these studies that we are paying for, have they been done already? Are you just copying over, or is this all new data, or what's going on?
There are updates. We did look at the prior studies as points of comparison, but the last study was done in 2007 or so. So we took the data. We actually looked at data going all the way back to 1995 and all the way through current time. So we have the data for the last, 7 or 8 years added into the mix.
Did it change? Because population didn't change.
No, but I'll jump in. Water conservation changed things quite a bit. We got a lot of good information, I think some new information over the last several years. And in addition, in terms of concentrations of what's coming into the plant and calculating the loads, you'll see those are, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're quite a bit higher than they were the last go-around in terms of pounds per day loading the plant.
Are you going to take into account that when the drought's over, water is going to go back?
Yeah, yeah, we will. But loads shouldn't go down, right? Because loads are you know, some activities don't change.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I'll add too is that there have been significant improvements at the plant over the last several years. And some of the data, since you know, Bruce had updated the flow meter not too long ago, and so a lot of the data that we're getting now is better than the data that you know you would have had 7, 8, 10 years ago. So I think there's quite a bit of value to doing this. We found that there were some things that came out of it that were you know, particularly useful, and if we'd have grabbed the old information and run with it, we'd have probably gone down the wrong path.
It also, in the course of our analysis, helped us reveal the issues with the flow metering,
right.
Which we're now pursuing.
Yep.
The team is now pursuing.
You pretty much answered my question. My basic one was that peak hourly factor, and I'd like to see that taken a look at harder. The only other one is with the TDS of the potable water, we have to honestly look at a system of removing TDS from the system. I wasn't sure if I heard that before when you were showing the conventional treatment processes you were talking about earlier. And I'm not aware of all new processes, but it's usually some kind of membrane, RO unit, or distillation, or something to remove the TDS, because usually most treatment plants only do suspended solids, as I remember, for the most part. So if you're looking to put this water back into the Morro Creek Basin, we have to clean it up, basically, is what I'm hearing at the TDS level. I assume you're looking at that in the later technical memorandum when you get to the waste. Is that correct?
That's correct. That, the purpose of this technical memo was to determine what constituents are in the wastewater, and then in the technical memo that you'll start to see next meeting, we look at the various treatment processes. I should back up and say this also established what are the regulations pertaining to the various end uses for the water, which would point to what you just talked about. At the next meeting, we'll start talking with you about the processes that are used to meet those water quality requirements.
Well, everything else in this document looked fine to me except for the ones I brought up. Thank you.
Yeah, Matt, real quick, on table 7.2 on page 28 of TM2, it's your list of compounds for emerging concerns. And I read the paragraph before that. So right now, I don't know, has the city detected any of these compounds or have had a method to do that yet?
I actually can't speak to that. Maybe Bruce is not in the room.
Emerging contaminants are not. They're generally unregulated contaminants. We have done some preliminary testing. I don't have that data in front of me. We, of course, detect caffeine and sucralose in our water supply. We will get you that information. I just don't have it at my fingertips right now.
So what you're saying right now, there's no regulations or limitations on what those things might be? Now, in the future, when we have to deal with them and treat for them, is that for the reclamation water has to deal with these? And what treatment? I guess you said a subsequent TM will talk about treatment. But what kind of treatment do we need to do in addition to what we're already doing for these compounds?
So, again, our process engineering experts will speak to that at the next meeting in more detail than I can. But you'll see us, you'll see a discussion about MBR, membrane bioreactor. So it's a membrane process, like Mr. Donnelly spoke about. So I mean, Mr. Shively, I'm sorry. And so that's one. And then for certain end use options, such as indirect potable reuse, we would use RO, reverse osmosis. So it's another layer of a barrier to remove those kinds of compounds.
Do you see this as a significant thing that we have to deal with in the future, or is it just something we would have dealt with the way we were going to treat this reclamated water anyways?
I see using it for human consumption, whether indirect potable or direct potable, is going to be a – other agencies are dealing with it right now. So the membrane filtration followed by reverse osmosis, probably followed by some advanced oxidation process. So where you're adding
peroxide or ozone, UV light to it, okay, to break down those long-chain hydrocarbon molecules that are smaller than the membranes can remove.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So in your under influence sampling program, you are saying, though, that you're making a recommendation to the city that they assess the prevalence of these compounds of emerging concern, that they basically start this study now.
Yes, ma'am.
So is the city, do we have the capabilities to do that?
Yes. In fact, Bruce has been working with two different labs to make sure they've got the right equipment, using the right procedures to get the best data. So that's underway.
And when I read the number 7 influence sampling program recommendations, my only thought was that by doing these studies, that they will all be done within the time frame, so not to, we can still meet our other commitments in regards to the FMP and the master reclamation plan. Those will all be completed.
I'll jump in on some of that. So the way we see a lot of this data that we're collecting is the facility master plan is a planning document that gives us a budget, gives us a range of operation and maintenance costs, gives us a footprint. We have the CEQA process, we have the master reclamation plan, and then we have the actual procurement of the of a construction/design team to build the plant. So some of the data we're putting together now, we're not going to have a complete data set to get a year's worth of data to wrap up facility master plan, but we can make conservative assumptions on what we need there to get through that process, and then we'll have a really good data set that's pretty rare for a lot of agencies to have, so that when you get somebody involved to come do the design and construction on the plant, they've got a really big data set to work from, and it helps them really dial in what they're doing.
Okay.
So that's really the purpose of it.
I just wanted to clarify,
yes, ma'am,
who was going to be the end user for this and when.
Yes.
So.
And they'll incorporate whatever they can that's available, but they're not going to hold up the master plan, and really no need to collect it.
I have one other question, and that has to do with under Section 2.2 population projections. how is the State Park campgrounds? We have two campgrounds in our city. How is that material treated, and where does it go? And does it go into our facility? And if not, if it does, it should be included in your study. And both of them have been reconfigured to accommodate more people. And we're just focusing on the 872 hotel rooms in the city of Morro Bay and projections for future years. But the actual parklands are not included. And if that would have an influence on what our needs are going to be as
right.
well.
Right. They are included, albeit described indirectly, I suppose. We are measuring, we currently measure the influent into the wastewater treatment plant, and ostensibly is all the flow from every contributor in the city. And then we use population as a proxy for how big the city is so that we can project the flow into the future. So we take the flow that we get today, we divide it by current population, that becomes a per capita wastewater generation rate. And within that wastewater generation rate is both permanent residents, transient occupancy, hotels or rentals, and any other contributors, whether it's industry or the park,
it's not,
or what
that
have
doesn't
you.
Say that in this report that you're including in the park. It's basically you're focusing on the hotels. I mean, there's a gap in terms of what the, the basis.
We'd be happy to describe that further.
Yeah,
in the memo.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with that comment that we could describe it further. But Matt's right.
Okay.
We're using parameters as proxies to capture the fact that we do have all the data from every use right now, how to project that in the future. And the same would apply on the tourists' side of things. The idea being, we've heard a lot of input about, you've got to capture the idea that the tourist
uses are not only seasonal, but they're a major contributor to everything in the city. And we agree that they're an important thing to consider. It's why we used hotel rooms in general as a proxy for that to gauge future expansion of tourist uses in the future and try to calibrate that relative to the level of input they would have to the overall picture as expressed by population. We can refine the description of that, but that's the concept we used.
All right, Mr. Woodson, I think this is the moment you've been waiting for.
No, I just have one sentence. I just hope that I think TM2 is a very good document. And
thank you.
I think we're lucky to have Black & Veatch. I hope staff listens very closely to your recommendations, especially I think we should crash, the city should crash on monitoring actual flows and quality of effluent this winter for design purposes, and I think that there's a lot of money on the table, and it need, and I agree with Black & Veatch that those meters should be installed for this winter's flows, because that's the maximum flows that are going to occur. So I hope that staff listens and implements those metering devices that are capable of doing quantity and quality.
The only comment I had was Bill's. Thank you. Same point on the flows, the maximum in particular.
Thank you.
I got a question for Rob. Hey, Rob, does the state parks have flow meters at their lift stations on in North Point there and also on the one by the Bayside Cafe?
No, I don't believe so. I think we're metering their water use, but not their output.
Okay. Here's another issue. Okay, and when you get years ago, they clear cutted a bunch of trees there so you could get big RVs and they can dump their water. I'm not a treatment guy, but I have a feeling that's one of the hardest to treat. Is that high chemical compound that comes out of RVs. Now, recently, they just expanded the one at North Point there, okay? Now, so we're kind of just treating state parks as a customer, okay? Now, you use your population, and you're using hotels by proxy, but what we have also is, like, de facto hotels are like the vacation rentals, okay? And what is happening is the citizens that live here are being burdened, are carrying the loads of state parks, expanding their service, okay? Vacation people, vacation rentals that are being rented out, okay? And that money's going right out of the city. And then who's left is the people are being burdened with this. And this is what I'm hearing outside. So what I would like to see is right off the bat, get state parks to put some flow meters in there and we charge them by the gallon, you know, so at least we get accurate data as well, not only from the city, but also from the people that are using the facility, and they should be at the table. They should come up with some cash to help with this process.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Let me just clarify. We don't have flow meters on their effluent, but we do meter their water usage. So they're a commercial user, so their wastewater rates aren't a flat rate like residential customers are. Their wastewater is based on their water use. So the more water that goes to the meter, the higher their wastewater bill is. So the only thing we don't capture is dump station waste. So
that's what I'm talking about.
We could look at a way to approximate that if without the flow meters or installing flow meters.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about. You know, that's a problem. That's actually something that we need to really take a look at with regard to state parks.
Okay. Yeah, those are good comments, and possibly in a future 218 add a recreational element to capture the higher cost of treating those chemicals. That seems like something that might be worth exploring. My only comment, and I think, or it's a question, and it was sort of answered earlier, I think. I just want to verify. The memo talks about our housing stock being well above 6,000, and so our population doesn't really reflect our housing stock because of the amount of vacation rentals we have. If demographics change or the market changes where more people are living in the vacation rentals than previously, or we get more vacation rentals, so maybe peak flows go up, that then would be addressed. The tech memo really can't make those predictions either way, but you mentioned earlier about the technologies being batched, and you could just adjust. You have the flexibility in the future to adjust to the demographics or market changes. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So you have the flexibility. Whatever could cause that in the future, whether it's higher occupancy or, more hotels, or there's some major shift in the general plan or whatever, then you could accommodate that, particularly with the types of designs we're looking at.
Great. Thank you. All right, I think we can move on to the next. Well, I'm going to take public comment at the end of the presentation, so you'll have your chance. Thanks. I'm surprised we have public comment.
Okay. So shall I continue?
Please.
Okay. We'll keep this one brief. So TM3, this is about the decommissioning of the existing plant. So this TM, basically just we did an inventory of everything that's at the plant, all the facilities and all the various major pieces of equipment. We developed a conceptual level cost allowance and a cost range for demolition of the existing plant, which included disposing materials, attempting to reuse certain equipment or salvage equipment. And an important point in there was the goal that we developed with the city staff asked us to focus on was maximizing the opportunity to redevelop the site. So part of the allowance that we developed looks at completely removing every part of the plant. So it's a conservative cost allowance set up to allow for the maximum amount of removal that might need to occur. We also identified any applicable regulations so that we're aware of those as the desire to decommission the plant moves forward and can implement any requirements. And then we outlined a decommissioning process around those. So pretty straightforward. I won't belabor the details on that one in the interest of time, unless you'd like to.
On the decommissioning, is the cost going to be like 60-40 for Cayucas and Morro Bay? Is that what it's agreed to, or how?
That's really beyond the scope of Black & Veatch's work. I think that'll be a topic for negotiation with Cayucas, but 60-40 is the number I remember for our ownership of the facilities there, so I would assume that we're going to stick to that number. If they own 40% of it and it needs to be demolished, they should pay for 40% of the demolition costs, would be what the city should be going into it at minimum.
I just hope that it doesn't turn into making a bunch of lawyers rich and it can just get the job done.
Sure, there'll be a bunch of lawyers working on this.
So, Rob, real quickly on that, on the latest rates that were adjusted, these decommissioning costs are not included in any of that?
No, there's an allowance for it's part of the overall project, so we don't have detailed costs on what it would be, but it was an assumption was made, and it was part of the overall project cost.
So, in essence, all ratepayers are paying
are already paying for it now.
Small pro rata share.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to just you have some more slides on this tech memo.
No, correct? I'm going to stop there because I think based on the comments from earlier, I'm looking at the slides, and I think it'll be more productive to just hear your comments. And as well, we'd like to leave some more time to talk about the next TM.
Okay, that's appreciated.
If that's okay with you.
Go down the roll.
You keep talking about the decommissioning and the plant and the best use of the property. Is that property, is the city plan on selling that property? And if they do, are they going to use that money to help offset the cost of building the new plant? Is that what we're doing here?
Again, that was beyond the scope of this. This was to determine costs for the actual physical demolition, not a political decision for what happens to the site after it ceased to be used. That'll be a further discussion later on. And it was, if it was purchased with enterprise fund monies, it needs to go back into the enterprise fund. So wastewater fund probably purchased the land. I would, is at least the land that the wastewater treatment plant sits on. I don't know about the where the cement plant is and Corp Yard, how that was purchased. But the land where the treatment plant sits on is enterprise fund money. Once, if we were to liquidate that property and sell it, that revenue would go into the enterprise fund to reimburse them.
Yeah, I had a couple, not so much questions as observations, and I don't know if it needs any lengthy answer unless it's something you can't do. I see a lot of the demolition being concrete, rubble, and asphalt, and it's going over to Coal Canyon landfill. And I guess the first question in my mind is, we live in a town that uses rock slope protection out in the pier areas and everywhere else. Is there an ability to somehow stockpile this concrete to be used in the future or tie it in with another project where they have to extend the jetty or beef up the jetty, things of this nature? Because the hauling out of here is going to be, you know, 50 trucks a day leaving the site, and it's a very high cost in that aspect of it. On the asphalt side, I know contractors down in Santa Maria where they pulverize the asphalt, turn it into basically the aggregate, add liquid asphalt, and lay it down as roads. And half of North Morro Bay would probably be tickled pink to see that wind up there. These are things I would like to see at least brought into the discussion of the technical memorandum. You did with the buildings, you did with the piping, you did with a lot of the other things, but we live in a town where riprap is hard to come by. You have to go all the way up near Nacimiento, I think is one of the closest spots. And those, if it works, I'd love to see it incorporated as that. And the only thing I'd say to you, Matt, in looking at the asphalt, because I want to make sure there was a scale of size that it'd make worthwhile for somebody to do so, your numbers on page 7 of the report talked about 52,000 square feet or so of asphalt. But when you put it into your cost estimate, you took it down to 640 yards, and it's about a factor of 10 off. I didn't know if you were actually leaving asphalt behind or you're only removing a minimal amount of the asphalt, or if it's just, hey, an error and you move on. It's something you might want to look at.
Yeah, those are excellent comments. Yeah. I think those are all easily addressed. And
I wasn't beating your numbers that hard. It was just us looking to see if there was enough asphalt to make the thing work.
Right.
And so
those
are my observations on it. Other than that, I think I got my other question answered about the Cayucas involvement in this, because I do see, and I could be wrong, I'm not a real estate appraiser, I see the cost of the demo work more than the worth of the land. So I'm not sure it's the kind of thing the city of Morro Bay could sit there and say, well, we'll just keep the land to pay for the cost of the demo work. But I could be wrong. Maybe that land's worth a ton more than that. Thank you.
Yeah, so we'll be able to address those comments in the technical memo. I think it is a good idea that we speak to the possibilities of recycling or reusing the concrete and the asphalt. At least just have some statements in the technical memo to remind us as a team to be mindful of those ideas going forward. The purpose or the task of this TM was to come up with a conservative all-in cost estimate allowance, so that you would have a good number to work from going into the future as you implement things.
Right.
One thing
I was hoping more from staff's end, because they may see Harbor Department projects coming up that may need riprap, and this would be a great place to get it from. And, you know, and that's why I'm saying I may be simplistic on this, and there's a lot of other issues, and that's why I was throwing it out there at least to be looked at, because I've never been in a town where so much riprap's needed, you know, living this close to the coast.
And, yeah, to respond to that, I think, you know, one of the things we've got to consider is we're a couple years out from knowing what the market might be for some of that recycled material. And what our direction to Black & Veatch was, give us a conservative range of what it would cost.
Right.
So the way we would see it is those could be things that would definitely save money at the time that the work's being done.
Right.
Definitely look at those opportunities. What we're recommending that we do in terms of the process is take the comments you all have on the technical memoranda. These tech memos are really intended to give you a chapter from the master plan. That's kind of what you're seeing with each one of these. What we want to do is get your comments and incorporate them, roll them into the draft facility master plan instead of reissuing the tech memo. So that's kind of what you'll see. Is you won't see a revised tech memo from us. That's kind of our recommendation, or from the Black & Veatch team, but you'll see it show up in the facility master plan in the draft, and that's where they'll have...
No, that's,
that's
fine.
What the notes are for.
I got what you're
for.
Going with it. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I have another question. It's probably outside the scope of this TM, but do we know the present worth value of the land and improvements there right now?
I've seen that number before, but I just can't pull it out of the... out of the air. For insurance requirements, we have a estimate of the improvement value, not the land value. We can bring that forward next time, or I'll email it out to the group.
I think I recall a GPA audit a couple of years ago, it said it's about $3.5 million.
Perhaps. That doesn't sound too far off.
So
yeah.
We're going to take $3.5 million of net assets and throw a stick of dynamite worth $5 million, and we're out. We're out. What, $8.5 million? Mm-hmm. It you know, goes against all the net increases and improvements. We got something we're writing off in that tune of $8.5 million.
Perhaps somewhere in that, but I don't have the number in front of me, so I'd want to verify that before.
No, there's been some talk about it. In fact, Steve brought this up about the value of the land. I can't imagine with the fact that it's been already identified as part of the sea level rise, the tsunami run-up, and also a flood hazard. What could we possibly ever market that property for? It has all those hazards associated with it.
Yes, for a portion of the property, yes. We are hoping to eventually get out of the courtyard business there and the cement plant business, which is a little bit further upland from that area, that may have a higher value. Perhaps the more seaward portion would be more recreational opportunities, and the landward portion more commercial opportunities. But I'm not a developer, so...
And if we sold the property, we have to pay Cayucas a portion of this sale? Because they have part ownership?
They have an equity share in the land, yes. Okay. They're on the title of the land, so...
So we would be paying Cayucas the money and...
Or they would be getting their share of it. They're an owner.
Right. And I think, yeah, if you look at it from a commercial perspective, it might not have much value due to the known hazards and CDP... coastal development permitting issues, but from a recreational standpoint, I personally see it as having high value, which has that trickle-down effect to our other existing and future commercial enterprises that will value from having a core location enhanced for recreational opportunities, local and tourist opportunities.
Just on page 4, paragraph 1, starting around line 9 or 10, it says Black & Veatch is currently preparing a water reclamation facility master plan for the city, which will develop the overall plan, configuration, location, and process for the new facilities. Is that a correct statement, or do we want to be saying that they're actually preparing the FMP? Because one of my concerns is that the reclamation master plan isn't quite in sync with the environmental document, and the environmental document is also going to be addressing where this thing is going to be located, and we're going to basically what the overall plan is and things like that. So I'm just wondering, maybe just strike that sentence. It's just some extra words that maybe doesn't, I don't know if we really want to talk about, refer to the reclamation plan, or we want to refer to the FMP. it's a minor.
I'll have to go back and look at it, but that sounds like a typographical error, because we've in other technical memos and perhaps even in this one said water reclamation facility master plan, FMP parenthetically.
Okay, well.
So maybe there's a word missing or somebody used the wrong word.
Yeah, the function of what you were saying that the reclamation facility reclamation plan is, because that's not going to be completed until after the environment, it's not in sync with the environmental document.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And so the elements that are in there, even though they may be all-inclusive, it just makes it seem like we're not going to have everything, a lot of significant, important things completed by the environmental document phase. I don't know. It's a minor point.
Okay.
You might want to just strike that sentence. You don't really need it.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Fair comment. Thank you.
I was wondering, too, we talked about costs, and so we know where we are with that. And then permits on page 11, it says that the application for the demolition process, that it will have to be reviewed by the coastal development permit will be required for the demolition. It will be reviewed by the city. With a certified local coastal plan, but does the is CSD involved with the permitting phase of this as well, Cayucas?
My sense is Cayucas would be an
agency.
Owner. There would be an owner, but I think the city would be lead agency on.
Just like the first project, where the city was the lead agency on applying for the CDP, it'd probably be the same here.
Okay.
Now is there. To continue with that dialogue, and this is beyond Black and Veatch's scope, but maybe for John Rickenbach, what has there been discussion about having the demolition be wrapped into the first CDP application, or has it been envisioned that that'd be a follow-up coastal action in a whole separate application?
We haven't figured that all the way through. What we do know is that we'd like the environmental document to cover that action whenever it does occur, to be able to account for that within the environmental review, because it may have ramifications to the rest of the project as well.
Okay, so that would provide for it potentially to be part of the first CDP or
correct.
Just one CDP.
Right, we want that potential to be okay. There through the CEQA document.
Good, glad to hear that.
In reading it too, it appeared that the actual decommissioning process will be included, or all of the studies that are necessary as part of the environmental document. And also, it sounds like you're recommending additional hazway studies out there, getting that completed. So, but one of the things that, as part of the Coastal Commission, the Coastal Commission will take into consideration both decommissioning work as well as future plans for the site. Now, I don't know if we're going to have future plans for the site nailed down by the time the Coastal Commission reviews that permit. So. If that's not a true statement, maybe we should strike that.
That's a fair observation. And I would say, again, putting a CEQA hat on, we're considering the whole of this project, which has to do with a new facility for the city. The future uses of the site could be anything and aren't really connected with this project, so we don't want to speculate about that.
Right. So I don't think that's something that maybe just you could strike that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just one small thing, too, is that it's California Fish and Wildlife now rather than Fish and Game.
Okay.
On page 12. So.
You all good?
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mr. Woodson.
I only have a very brief statement. On page 9, you allude to a decommissioning process. I'm an old startup engineer, and I know that it's very valuable from the perspective of the owner that the O&M personnel be deeply involved in the commissioning process of the new facility. And I know Black & Veatch is aware of that, and they've gone through it many, many times. And I I don't see any of the complexities that would be involved in utilizing those people in the commissioning process while you're decommissioning this plant in conjunction with a co-owner, Cayucas, and I see all kinds of political issues of which staff and the city council are going to address, and probably you don't want to go any further than this, but I just foresee that it's imperative that the owner involves the O&M people in the commissioning process of the new facility, and how this is going to be coordinated is still to be determined. And I know that you could go litany days on it, but I just thought I would mention it. The only other thing that I thought was interesting was I found when I was on the Planning Commission that the Native Americans in the vicinity are very involved in their protection of their traditional sites, and I didn't see any mention of Native American involvement in the decommissioning and the leveling and the excavation. I don't know whether you're going to go into virgin soil or not, and whether they need to be involved, but you might look at that and mention them anyway, because they're pretty tough folks.
that part may actually be in some other section of the, say, the environmental document that's addressed in the environmental document under mitigation measures, because since this is going to be included in the environmental document, this would just be one other area that would need to be taken into consideration, I think.
That's correct. It will be included in the environmental document. Here, I think we're mostly focused on the technical issues, but a good point, and we will be addressing that. Great. Richard.
I need some little clarity. When you're talking about the decommissioning, you are talking about an EIR that is incorporating the decommissioning of the tear down of this old plant tacked onto the new project?
Yes. The whole of the project needs to consider what it takes and what would be the logical outcome of that. The timing of that is not entirely known, but the fact is it is part of the entire process. So, yeah, we do have to look at it.
Okay, given that, we have a number here of like $5 million, right? Wouldn't it behoove the city council to start, like, talking to Cayucas about this right now? Because I see, here's what I'm a little bit of concern. A few years ago, Cayucas had hired WSC, a former employee here, went over there and did some work for them. And their first option is to stay right where they're at. So the longer we dink around with this, they're happy right where they're at. I mean, I'd be happy too if I had a town, you know, was in a town and was pumping raw sewage to another town, didn't have to deal with it. But we need to, I think the city council needs to start having a real discussion. If we're lacing all these this whole EIR process into this, maybe having that separate might not be a bad idea, because it might, from a political standpoint, I know from a political standpoint, there's going to be friction.
That's a lot of good points to raise right there, and agree with what you're saying conceptually. We also want to make, and while we're sensitive to the idea of the coordination with Cayucas, we also are sensitive to the law relative to what's considered the whole of a project. If it's a anticipated likely action that comes as a result of what you're doing, it's something that has to be considered in the environmental document. Now, it's also true that many environmental documents cover a lot of actions that don't actually occur as the projects are unfolded. But we do need to consider what could happen as a result from the environmental sense.
And one thing that I would suggest, too, is the committee could also express that they've got a concern with council, for council to, you know, work with the district. I mean, that's entirely valid for the
for the committee to note is that, you know, their recommendation to council could mean, you know, we recommend you work with Cayucas on this issue through the JPA or similar.
And we hear that there will be a JPA this month here, the second Thursday, whatever date that is. So it'll be in Morro Bay. So we are having a JPA this month, and it would be an opportunity for public comment to that effect too. We don't have anything on the agenda regarding that, but I think public comment would be appreciated at any of our joint meetings.
What time and where is that going to be, Rob?
November 12th.
Thank you, Barbara. November 12th at our usual place is the multipurpose room, yep, the community center at 6 p.m. Janine's nodding her head. I got all those points right, so that's a good thing.
Okay, well, again, please go ahead.
It's a general question. The Corp Yard, in the event that the Corporation Yard cannot be moved out to Rancho Colina or the Household Hazardous Waste Collection Facility or what have you, does the city have any plans to buy the adjacent plant where the concrete company was?
The city owns that property.
Oh,
we lease
that.
It to Hansen.
Okay, so we have a lot of land that potentially we could move the courtyard over. I know there was some concern about in this article about the courtyard being sandwiched in between the old concrete plant and the existing water treatment facility, but it seems like it could be reconfigured potentially so that if you want to open this area up for other kinds of uses, I mean, you could still keep it there.
Potentially, yes.
But just maybe reconfigure it?
Yes.
Okay.
And that will be a fun process to watch unfold because that will definitely be a political decision. Myself, as a parent who watches my daughter play soccer on a dirt softball infield because we don't have any soccer fields in town, and for 4 years watch my son play Little League on a softball field, I believe we're desperately lacking adequate sports facility, recreational facilities, and that's something that could potentially go there as well.
So that's
out of the scope of all of us here for now until the demolition occurs. And as its toxin report, which I do hope we keep because it is true, any future use will require a CDP. And I think that was the intent of the statements in that paragraph.
Correct.
That this is going to most likely just be graded to exist preconditioned slope to address the drainage, and then the community will work through what they want to see on that site moving forward. So thank you. No other comments on this? We can move on to Tech Memo 6.
If I may, I wanted to just say thank you very much for all of your comments. I know this was the first time that you have seen our work, and this was the first time that I've been up here to present, and I think there's some wrinkles to work out in the process of how we present and give an overview of these TMs for you. But on behalf of our whole team at Black & Veatch, just want to thank you for taking the time to really, really read these technical memos. Our team puts a lot of work into them, and we work very closely and I think really well with the city staff and the program staff. It's been very collaborative. We have workshops with them in advance of submitting the technical memos, get their input to make sure that it's in there before we submit it. And as a result, you've seen the product of that in terms of things like the sampling program being implemented or going out and doing flow measurement as a result of the data problems that we were experiencing. So, again, I just wanted to say thank you for all that. Okay, let's talk about TM6. Okay, so TM6 is the one I handed out to you. You'll be reviewing in the coming days and weeks. It covers biosolids, the biosolids treatment evaluation. Probably would have been well served to have a slide up here that says, what are biosolids? Biosolids are basically what's left over after the wastewater treatment process. So we'll treat the wastewater, turn it into something that's reusable and use it, and then we're left over with a combination of the solids that were in the wastewater and still a lot of water in it. So this TM is looking at alternatives for how to best make use of those biosolids and dispose of those biosolids. The city currently processes the biosolids that you have now with digestion. We'll talk about digestion in a minute. And it's all hauled to Liberty Composting. So it's just disposed of through landfilling or composting. They process it for composting and landfilling. You generate about 270 tons per year of biosolids. And as you'll see as we go through some of these slides, the basic steps are you have sludge that comes from the wastewater treatment processes. There's a step that's called thickening, which is an attempt to remove as much water as possible. The remainder solids and liquid can go into a digester or not. A digester is basically a place for more bugs to eat the food that's in the wastewater and in that product. Then we dewater it. Try to get all the water out as much as we can to make it either as light as possible to haul it or to create reusable products for those biosolids. And then those products become either disposed or reused. So I wanted to give you a quick snapshot of what biosolids are. So this TM spoke to treatment, disposal, and reuse options. We looked at the regulations that pertain to both land application and other biosolids reuse alternatives. We've identified and evaluated several options for the treatment. We also looked at a combination of disposal options and reuse options. And then we've developed four alternatives that are going to be carried forward into the FMP. We'll talk about that in a minute. So I have a number of slides which you have in front of you, and I'm going to try not to go through them in grave detail. Up on your screen is a summary of the federal regulations, and the high points of this information is basically to say what we're concerned with is potential public health impacts of biosolids. So the federal regulations speak to concentration of constituents in the solids product, vector attraction, basically does it attract vermin and bugs and things that can spread diseases, and is there sufficient pathogen reduction, basically, to make it as safe as possible to be around humans. And there are a number of classifications for biosolids that biosolids can be treated to, which are listed up there and you'll be reading about in the technical memo. Likewise, I won't tire you with too many details on various regulations. You'll read about these. But on the screen are some of the state and local regulations that pertain to biosolids, some of them having to do with the State Water Resources Control Board and the San Luis Obispo County having limitations on biosolids uses. And then there's a series of assembly bills that have been passed in recent times that get into some details about organic waste and other types of waste that affect biosolids treatment. Up on your screen here is an overview, a diagram of potential biosolids treatment process options. So you'll see this in your technical memo, and it follows the steps that I just outlined for you with collecting sludge from the wastewater treatment system. In this case, it shows it being brought to a digester. And then the important point here is that we wanted to point out is a big part of this technical memo is to identify and try to take advantage of energy recovery options and to look at reuse options. Currently, for your biosolids, like I said, you're just taking them to a landfill, so we wanted to evaluate the potential to use the biosolids more beneficially. So those are two areas where we're trying to make the project greener, so to speak. Here's a long laundry list of the options considered. Next week, or next meeting, I should say, when we have our technology experts here, they'll be concentrating on the liquid treatment technologies, but we'll also be receiving comments from you on this technical memo, and they'll be well-suited to be able to walk you through any questions you might have about the details of all these various pieces of equipment and systems that are used in the biosolids industry. We also looked at a number of options for the reuse, like I said. So we've looked at disposal options. We looked at a number of different landfill options. We were actually just evaluating differences in cost among options, comparing them against what you do now. And then, but more importantly, we were focusing on the reuse options, whether it's composting, other biosolids management options, or land application. This slide just speaks to the process we followed, and I mentioned earlier about how we have been preparing the technical memos in a collaborative way with the city staff. So we put together a list of criteria and weighting and scoring that were used to review all of these options with the staff, and they weighed in and helped refine all of those options or scoring criteria, and that is how the four alternatives that you'll see on the screen on the next slide, next two slides, were developed. The important point here is that third bullet is that TMs 6, 7, and 9, which includes biosolids, liquid treatment, and organic treatment, the facility master plan is going to merge all those together. So what you're going to be seeing in the TMs is taking them each kind of in isolation from one another. For example, the biosolids TM that's in front of you today. But in the FMP, we'll be merging them together to make a cohesive system. And then again, we arrived at four alternatives. These will all be evaluated in more detail. And when I say more detail, it's especially focused on the costing, O&M, and capital cost of the alternatives. Alternative one is just keeping the status quo. Alternative two is actually a less sophisticated method of just taking the sludge and dewatering it and sending it to composting. That's certainly a possibility here.
Matt, I want to jump in too. When we say status quo, I want to make it real clear.
Yes, sir.
We're not reusing any facilities at the existing plant site or anything of that nature. What he's talking about is a similar digestion process using modern equipment at the new site. So I just want to make sure that's clear, because that's a question that always comes up. So are we trying to reuse? We're not trying to reuse anything. We're just saying we looked at that process with new equipment, new everything at a new site as an option.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, very important point. And then two other alternatives. These are more sophisticated, developing, you saw on an earlier slide, the various classifications of biosolids. So class A EQ, exceptional quality, that's the highest grade, means processing it to the maximum extent for a resale, land application, and what have you. A more complex set of processes, as you see on the screen, because there's more colored boxes, right? And then alternative four is dewatering the sludge and taking it to a landfill. So you'll read about the details of those options in the technical memo. I just wanted to highlight them here for you, so you have a sense of it going in, and also to show it to the public that may be watching at home. This is just, yeah. So that's the end of that presentation.
All right, thank you. I'm going to look to my left and pick on Dale again. You have any questions for Matt?
I just have one. Odor. Is it going to smell like the plant that's there now, or what's that going to be like? I've been getting a lot of questions about that.
In the FMP, once we start to arrive at a final alternative or set of alternatives, and it's important to point out that the FMP is not necessarily going to select a singular alternative. It may put forward a number of viable alternatives so that the city has flexibility in its procurement with either in the design process or design build process, depending on how the project delivery is handled. But the point is, during the FMP, once we've honed in on some alternatives will also be considering the cost and the types of systems that are needed for odor control. And the intent is to have it be as odor-free as possible.
So you don't know yet?
Correct. Currently, we do not know, but we will be considering it in the FMP, I guess I should say.
I'm going to ask a question about the smell because it also comes from the headworks, right, as it's coming in. And I imagine this is going to have a different technology than what's existing. So we're going to see an odor reduction just from the front end treatment as well.
Yeah, headworks is a big odor point. In terms of the sludge, a lot of the technologies that they're looking at are technologies where the equipment's really pretty well contained. So the odor control can be pretty simple for some of these options. Headworks is a big deal. One of the things we've looked at is siding, covering the headworks, doing everything we can you can contain that odor so it doesn't go off site. So we've got their methods for doing that.
Yeah, because I've been at facilities where the headworks is in a shell, container, and you don't smell anything until you actually open the shell.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
I just had an observation. If you spend more than 5 minutes looking at sludge drying beds, it sounds like you're going to be dealing with limited lands, and I assume one of the mechanical processes will probably come more into play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Matt, is this a TMC, a draft document right now?
This is a draft document. Okay. Oh, no. Take that back. This has been reviewed. It's been submitted to city staff, reviewed, and their comments have been incorporated. So it's ostensibly final.
Needs to be signed.
Correct.
The disposable reuse, disposable options landfill, basically you treat it to a certain level and you just cart it away, basically. But under reuse options, these are activities that would occur at the new plant.
Correct.
The footprint of these options are being taken into consideration, and would it expand the plant that much more than
We're actually in that very process right now.
Yeah.
In fact, last week our team was here with the city staff. We've jokingly called them our paper dolls. So we had a big map of the site, and we had all our little boxes of the various processes, and we were arranging them on the site. And so certainly we're taking into account the area needed for all of these processes.
And so when you talk about on-site composting, then you still need to basically find somebody who's going to buy this material.
Correct.
So it's a marketing thing that
correct,
you have to deal
right.
with. And with contracted biosolids management, that's already set up where it goes to some other place.
That's akin to what is done now with the city.
And then the land application, again, we would have to have a buyer or somebody who wants this material, and it's going to require hauling.
Correct.
So,
and within this TM, we reached out to the various landfills to determine who would be available to take the solids. I guess did you say land application?
Well, no, I'm thinking when you're talking about reuse options.
Yes.
I'm assuming that you're treating it to a higher level.
Correct.
And so then it's going to go to ag fields, either in San Luis or Kern or King County, which is going to require processing and hauling.
That's correct. I misheard. So I stopped myself there. That's right.
I guess what I'm saying is the reuse options is going to require a certain footprint, a certain amount of activity, in and out movement with and hauling of materials and stuff like that.
That's right. And one of the things that cities and agencies have to evaluate in these decisions is their desire to get in the business of trying to market biosolids products. So quite often you see examples like what you're doing now, where you just have a vendor come in and take your end-use product away, and then they process it and handle it from there rather than the city staff trying to do it themselves. But there are examples, many examples, and our firm has been involved with where agencies have developed fertilizers and other types of products, and they went out and marketed and sold those products.
in a town of 10,000 people?
No, the examples I am thinking of and speaking to here are for larger cities.
Sure.
If this is final and it's already been, why are we having our input? What is the purpose of this?
That's a good question. So the purpose is these tech memos are provided so that you all can review them. The input you provide goes into the facility master plan. Because remember, these are will ultimately become chapters in facility master plan.
Yeah, that's okay.
Rob?
Admin draft finaled. Okay. So they've been reviewed internally, not externally.
Yeah.
So they need to be publicly reviewed so they can be incorporated in the final facilities master plan document.
The preliminary final.
John?
Yeah.
John? Are we gonna go past five? Do we need to make a motion and do all that?
Well, I was gonna see if we had comments on my right first.
I know we have public
comments. Yeah, so I was gonna see if we could squeeze it all in or not. Do we have comments on the right? And it's fine to go past five.
I just have a quick question to staff, and this brings it up, and I think Dale said it succinctly that I'm not sure. Maybe you could remind me of what the format of the FMP facilities master plan is going to be like, and what we can expect. Is it going to be all of these TMs in a row, 1 through 9, and then with a managerial cover sheet, and say if you want to talk more details, look at chapter TM2. Is there a concept that you're going to package this in some manner of which you're going to hand it to the city?
Yeah, and in fact, we have a draft outline which we're currently going to be working with Mike and his team to refine. But no, we're not going to just bind all the technical memos together. The technical memos basically inform the FMP. So we'll be writing an introduction. We'll be bringing in the key parts of the technical memos into the document. We'll be refining the text based on things that evolve between now and when we get toward publishing the FMP. We'll be incorporating your comments along the way. So it'll be a cohesive document that you'll read from beginning to end. From time to time, it will refer to details that are in these technical memos. Because they themselves are quite long and have things that that aren't germane necessarily to the final FMP, but you might be of interest to show how the FMP was developed. So these will be included in the appendix of the FMP.
Let me just get that motion now before you go, Parva. So I guess could I add a motion to go till 5:15?
I will make a motion to go to 5:15.
Thank you, sir.
I second it.
All right. Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Parva, continue.
Thank you. Just a quick question. On the four evaluation, technical evaluation, you mentioned there was criteria. Can you elaborate just at a high level if cost or what the other criteria were? And were those four realistic alternatives and clustered in such a way so that the fifth alternative wouldn't be real close to the fourth, so that we're assured you're evaluating realistic alternatives based on...
Yeah, I'll try to summarize that. Cost is definitely a factor, although at this point we haven't done detailed cost estimates. So we did comparisons based on experience. We compared them. This is generally a higher, more expensive option compared to a lower option. We looked at that both with respect to capital and O&M cost, and then there were a series of qualitative factors, so things like odor generation, staff burden, and a number of other ones like that that were all put in the list, and then we worked together to come up with weighting factors and relative scoring for those. Regarding your last question, these four were fairly clear as being the most viable, and they are realistic. They're based on actual end use or disposal options that you can actually implement.
(Clears throat)
these biosolid discussions, I was wondering, is your FMP taken into consideration greenhouse gas reductions and greenhouse gas capture with regards to this process in your FMP? We in California, you know that we have a pretty aggressive reduction, and one of the biggest places you could reduce greenhouse gases is in a wastewater treatment plant.
Right. Mike, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I can speak to that. A lot of that will be done through the CEQA process, that we're, which will be analyzing the FMP and also the project alternatives. And that'll be a standard part of the, you know, the CEQA document. And the other thing I'll say is where we've captured that is with you'll see discussions in there of energy efficiency, and so that's where we'll capture a lot of that within the master plan. Is we're looking for technologies that are energy efficient, and you'll see that that's one of the criteria in a lot of these different comparisons we have for liquid and solids treatment. So we're capturing the energy efficient part of that here, and then the greenhouse gas, the specific analysis is done through the CEQA process.
And to add to that, it's not just energy efficiency, but also opportunities for energy recovery.
Okay.
So the digestion process generates natural gases, which can be used for generators or other uses at the plant.
Yeah, like methane capture and stuff.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So you are looking at the energy efficiency and energy recovery as part of the, because that will balance out the cost as we.
That's right. I didn't enumerate all of the qualitative factors that were used in the evaluation, but these are in that list. Yes.
Yeah. The way I look at it is like, you know, the value of carbon is maybe like to make an analogy is like buying an apple first started. Those stocks were not very expensive, but now a different story.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll move on to public comment.
Terrific. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. It was a great presentation. Look forward to next meeting. And I am going to hold you guys to 3 minutes. I'm sometimes liberal with your time, but you get your 3 minutes tonight.
Mr. Chairman, commissioners, my name is Steve McElvain. I wanted to talk about technical memo 2 on page 8. They're talking about the design of the plant eventually going to the build-out of Morro Bay of 12,000. They talk about Cayucas in here, but they haven't talked about Rancho Colina. And if we become the site that's picked, obviously the 250-some-odd people that live in that community are going to be part of this. Now, you can always add a filter in there, I guess, to actually take care of it. The problem is, when you get to the Water Quality Control Board, they're going to want to be realistic in what the building design is, because whatever that number is going over to page 22, and they're going to put it into the actual design of the facility, and that's what it's designed to actually take. And it's like the chairman pointed out a minute ago, I don't think we can, from a design capacity, assume that the same percentage of vacation rentals are going to continues to exist. I think they're going to eventually go into retirement homes for people. So I think that is going to increase the load, and that should be considered in there. Unfortunately, what we don't know is what's going to happen to the wastewater facility site itself. That could very easily, if it goes into visitor serving uses, be hundreds and hundreds of people that will be occupying the 24 acres. I don't think the city's going to put it all in a lawn. But I think before the final facility master plan is finally generated, that the design capacity should be what's realistic and what's there versus coming back and telling 100 people in Morro Bay that they don't get to build in their property because that was allocated to somebody else and they forgot to put that into the total numbers. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for comment on this item? All right, great. Just so as follow-up, we had clarification on state parks. Was Rancho Colima and their 250 coaches considered?
We currently don't have them in the projection. Reason being is, you know, the city's current policy is to, you know, they're not a customer of the city now. That can easily be added in the master plan, the draft master plan, if we see that the negotiation with the property owner proceeds to the point where that's an option, or where that's necessary or appropriate.
And, you know, it's about a 2% increase.
As I say, it's probably a fairly small percentage.
Yeah, but we can accommodate that in the draft master plan depending on how the discussions go.
Okay, thank you.
Well, one of the things that we've tried to characterize is a regional plant. Mm-hmm. Not having Rancho Colina, we lose that. I think that we have to consider them as part of our regional approach to this project. Do we not? We have to keep them in there, otherwise we don't have that regional aspect anymore.
Yes, we've talked about it being a regional plant. I don't know that that's a requirement by any agency, but it's a goal of the city is to keep it as a regional plant. And it the 200-plus coaches plus the RV park will be addressed in the facilities master plan one way or the other.
Okay. Great. This is receive an update and provide comment, which we did for a very long time. So going to close down the new business item and move on to D, closing comments. Do any members have any closing comments tonight? All right. Excellent. Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I would like to recommend doing a little better outreach to the residents on Highway 41. If we can get mailers out there, that any address on Atascadero Road that has the Morro Bay 93442 zip on it, that would be great. There's a lot of people out there that have no idea what's going on, and they're starting to stop by my house.
Should we start holding meetings at your house?
No. I don't like humans.
Yeah, and I'll kind of follow up on that. I also, my understanding is that they, you know, the people out there, they're looking at having a wastewater treatment plant next to their property, and some of them, they're property owners, and they're out of water. So I've been leery of this reclamation ready. We're gonna need water produced. I mean, right from the get go, I think.
Okay, excellent. So just to confirm, we talked about this earlier, we are having a meeting November 17th. It'll just be without the city council.
Yes, and the 17th is community center? Yep.
Is that the community?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
3 o'clock.
3 p.m.
Yes.
So I'm going to adjourn this meeting, and we will reconvene not at a special joint city council water reclamation meeting, but at the community center multi-purpose room, 1001 Kennedy Way, on November 17th, 2015, at 3 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
About it. It was 2 hours.
Yeah, well, we did it.
Thank you.